101, a version 1 podcast.
Welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations about technology and innovation with some of the UK and Ireland's leaders and trailblazers. My name is Peter Gothard, and today I'm joined by Nico McDonald, educator, facilitator, and consultant working between innovation and creativity. So, Nico, that's the summary, but could you tell us a little bit more about what you're working on at the moment?
Yes, yeah. So I combine working as an educator, teaching around subjects around creative industries and digital media at London South Bank University and an American study abroad program called CIEE, and also initiating my own projects around areas that I think are important to understand better. So one project I'm working on at the moment is looking at the next 50 years of the internet and taking the past 50 years as, if you like, a living lab or a massive data pool of information that we can create understanding around to see how what I call large-scale socio-technical change takes place, and therefore how we can accelerate that in the future. And we really need to accelerate socio-technical change because it's critical to the future of humanity.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge goal. So I guess the next 50 years, that's because are we now in the 50th, or we're reaching the 50th year?
Well, technically the 51st year.
Right.
Yes.
So, I mean, to an extent, you're thinking, I guess, that the past 50 years haven't been really chronicled particularly well, perhaps.
In a way, one of the beauties of the project is that the internet, and I'll just call it the internet for want of a better term, is self-chronicling. And that is a unique aspect of both the medium and of this period in history, and also the fact that a lot of the pioneers are still alive. You know, Vinton Cerf is still alive. Bob Kahn, I saw speak in London recently. Peter Kirstein, who is our British equivalent of Kahn and Cerf, just celebrated his 89th birthday, I think, and just retired as a professor at UCL around the corner from here. And then obviously Tim Berners-Lee's still, you know, basically a kid.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of that history that can be recorded firsthand, which is incredible. So in a way, I think the story has been well told at a lot of different levels, but I'm very interested in the very high level, which is trying to understand what is it, what are the conditions that created the ability for humanity to create the internet and the web as they are, and what can we learn about that that we can apply to thinking about future, what are sometimes called general purpose technologies, technologies which have the ability to, when used properly, transform lots of different areas of social and economic and national life.
It all sounds fantastic. So what, how is that sort of project or study manifesting itself, like, at the moment? What's the execution?
Well, I'm trying in some ways to invert the model that traditional research takes place, and that model is to, particularly in the academy, and is to do, or government, is to do lots and lots of primary and secondary research over a long period of time, and to spend a long time analysing that and trying to, you know, pull out themes and trends and insights. And I'm trying to almost invert that so that we invite people to make a contribution about how they have used ICT, internet technologies, in some way to transform what they do, either in their personal or social life, or in their work life, or in their political life, or elsewhere. So very much emphasizing that everybody will have a story, many stories about this. And those stories will be, I believe, quite empowering to tell, and will benefit people from reflecting on those things. And of course, because we have the internet and the web, they can be shared directly now. And then we can look at those stories, look at that data, and then try and draw from that larger sort of macro trends, larger insights and so on. So in a way, I want to get away from the we'll reveal everything model of research, which you see in, as I say, in the academy, and create value straight away.
So in terms of the contributions or, dare I say, stories people could tell, this could be anything from I met my future partner on Tinder all the way through to, I don't know, I was going to do a physics degree, but I wandered into a computer lab and now I'm a dot-com millionaire kind of scale.
Yeah, and I think there's, I don't think it takes very much reflection to think about an area of your life that if you went back 10 or 20 years, you did in a completely different way. You know, clearly, anything around communication, access to knowledge, you know, day-to-day work, the way that we do those things, we have changed the way we do those things because we've seen that something has greater facility, greater productivity, we can produce higher quality work, or in our social lives, I don't think even, well, possibly the forefathers and foremothers of the internet could have envisaged something like a rich social media like Facebook. Mm. But the ability for us to have debates about current affairs with our network of friends and associates across the world in real time and to have access to all those minds and all those ideas and insights is such an incredibly powerful thing. And yet we all have access to that.
Yeah. But in a way, we don't have the words, the language to describe it. And maybe to go back to what you said earlier, you said you'll call it the internet, but it's almost like you're not happy with that word because it could be something else. And maybe we'll discover what.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in a way, we use shorthands for everything. It does frustrate me often when people elide the web and the internet and don't understand the difference between them, or the idea that the internet is a platform upon which different services work. But you know, we also find that with any new invention or any new general purpose technology, the terminology we use for it comes from the previous generation. So we use metaphors historically in the age of clockwork, you know, the 18th, 19th century, we use the metaphor of clockwork to describe, you know, any new area of activity, you know, physiology and understanding the human body. Mm. And now we use the term network and, you know, that our brains are wired in a certain way. So we've taken, you know, in a way, a metaphor for cognition from the internet age. And likewise, the internet has taken its own words, you know, the web. You know, well, it's not really a web. You know, Tim Berners-Lee knew that in 1989, but it was a term that kind of worked. So we do have a lot of legacy terms because we don't really know how to describe things, or we haven't agreed on descriptions, or we haven't really sort of got to the nub of what that thing is such that we can describe it in a new way. And that's all a function of the maturity of how we engage with these things, and it comes in time.
Mm. So we're at the point maybe with, I'm still going to keep calling it the internet, while taking
right.
into mind that I shouldn't now. But do you think we are still early on? I mean, it's probably an obvious answer to this question, but, you know, are we still early on in our experience and our ability to grapple with this concept? And even though we've, you know, there are many of us now who've had it for our entire lives, we're still in a way finding our feet.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that shouldn't be surprising. I often ask people that I'm speaking to or my students and so on, how old they think the internet is. And people think it's very recent. They either equate it to the web or to dial up internet access. And so they'll kind of put it, you know, 20 or 25 years ago or even more recently. Mm. So at one level, we imagine that we've had a huge rate of change, that there's been, you know, disruption, as it has to be called these days, because so much has happened in so little time. But if you actually look at it over a period of 50 years, then you can see that things have changed relatively slowly, still quickly compared to the rate at which, say, electrical power was introduced into the economy and society, but still relatively slowly. And if you take it back further and you go back to Vannevar Bush and the idea of the Memex in, you know, the mid-1940s, or the invention of the transistor in 1957, or the integrated circuit in the late 60s, it is actually a change which has been very slow to be instantiated. Mm. And we need to recognize that, that actually at the same time, the foundational ideas that we are now building on and rolling out are 70 years old And as an aside, we need to be making sure that the foundations for the next new general purpose technologies for the next 70 years are being put in place, even if it's very hard to see what they might be.
Mm.
So that's a caveat that we're in a way exhausting the mine of those ideas now, and we need to be cautious about not exhausting the mine without digging new workings, if you like.
Right. And I mean, it's interesting as well to compare the internet to some of those other things, because to an extent, you know, the transistor was a piece of technology, whereas the internet is or should be a philosophy or an approach or a state of mind, because essentially it's about, I mean, maybe this is boiling it down, but it's about managing knowledge, or it's about accessing knowledge. And, you know, are we missing tricks in terms of what we can be doing with this? I'm going to say network, but, you know.
Yes, sure.
It's connectivity.
Sure. Yeah. Well, in a way, the applications, you know, it's true with any technology that it gets invented for one purpose, or, you know, a limited set of purposes. And then because mankind is an experimental species that, you know, is kind of restless and never satisfied, you know, we keep seeing new possibilities for this thing and extending what it can do. And the idea of a general purpose technology, although it probably wasn't recognized at the time, is that it has a kind of fundamental characteristic to it that allows it to be applied in many different scenarios. So just as the steam engine was invented to pump water out of mines, but then we discovered that you could power a loom with it and a locomotive, and you could generate electricity with it, and so on and so on. We are still discovering new uses for ICT, for want of a better term. So, you know, the sharing of knowledge broadly was the kind of fundamental reason for the invention of the internet, or the sharing of access to tools that could process data. But I wouldn't in any sense limit it to knowledge. I mean, we can see now that the internet is being used in a fundamental ways in manufacturing, you know, everything from, you know, new forms of making to automating assembly lines and doing real-time inventory and logistics and supply chain. And I can't see any area of social life which internet technologies won't at some point be incredibly valuable for and transformative of. But that's because of their character and our restlessness and desire for progress.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think as well, you know, we are now at a point where we are feeling a little bit hemmed in by what we're working with.
But I also think we have a sort of, in a way, culturally, a lack of intrigue about how things work. And if we go back to the Meccano era of the 20th century and the crystal set building, you know, grandparents that we had, or, you know, the young men who could repair a Ford motor car, you know, in their sleep, or rebuild and rebore the engines and the cylinders and so on. We don't have that sort of engagement with actually really understanding our technology. Now, clearly it's more complex than it was, but, you know, we ought to have, or the fact that we don't have that intrigue amongst the population and to an extent amongst young people, I think is a sort of signal that we're not in that kind of making, experimenting culture. We're in the consuming culture, which is not, you know, whereas if you went to Shenzhen or Guangzhou, or, you know, you go to, you know, these amazing cities where they're built around lots of people making things, you know, designing components, putting them together, you know, quite doing some quite fundamental things, but, you know, with a kind of, you know, productive kind of face on it. And, you know, you probably feel a bit like you would in Birmingham, you know, in 1840, and that kind of sense of aspiration and intrigue and melding of different skills and capabilities and domains.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as a degree level linguist, I can provably say that learning a computer language is like learning any other language.
Right.
And if you have a 3, 4, 5 year old learning, say Python, which in fairness is often happening now.
Yeah.
curriculum wise, but you know, if you were teaching C++ whatever to a 5 year old, they'd be probably fluent by 12. Mm. And then if they had full mastery of just what felt to them like a normal way of communicating, they could build. Mm. At that point, their imagination would be the only limit because they would be fluent. And I think at least that's a point we should be trying to get to.
Yes, yeah. And I do think culturally we don't, I think we should have an aesthetics of code. I think code in some ways, it's not equivalent to music, but there should be a sensibility about the aesthetics of coding and a kind of sense that it's a beautiful thing. In the same way that we can admire, you know, Iron Bridge in Coalbrookdale or, you know, the Severn Bridge or, you know, these great pieces of engineering. We have a language and we have a sensibility around those things, but we don't really have a sensibility around software engineering, and neither around actually the aesthetics of computing as a literal sense. So I talk about how I sit between innovation and creativity. I think it's creativity, you know, Steve Jobs famously argued, you know, liberal arts plus technology gives you Apple. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those abilities to understand people, to create forms for ICT which are meaningful and masterable and so on, which has released the power of the technology. It's not the power, but it's released it. Mm. And we don't even have a big narrative in the UK around architecture, around fashion, even around graphics and typography. You know, we have a narrative around, you know, automobile design, but we don't have a narrative around interface design or even product design in as much as it relates to interaction. And I think that's, again, a sign of a maturity that we need to reach. Because if, you know, our cultural commentators, let alone everyone else, don't have a narrative or a way of understanding these things, of talking about them, then it shows we're not really engaged with the challenges of how we create the kind of ICT of the future that we need.
Yeah. I have a past as a writer in the video games industry.
Right, all right.
And it always came as quite sad to us in that industry that no matter how much more money the video games industry makes than, say, the film industry in the UK, it never gets the respect or the funding or the support it deserves. And, you know, every so often there will be a campaign from the likes of sort of Ian Livingston. Mm. You know, he founded IDOS Interactive as well as Dungeons and Dragons before that. You know, he's got a massive history kind of in turning what people may call geeky pursuits into something marketable. But no matter what these people do, it never seems to click.
Yes.
You know, and there's a real image problem, which I just do not understand at this point. Probably because I'm looking in out from the inside to an extent, but I think you're absolutely right.
I think on the games thing, I think I teach creative industries, and one of the things I teach students about is that in any new medium, you have to ask the question, are we creating a new media form or just a new medium for doing old things? Mm. And in most forms, you know, streaming media, for instance, podcasts aside, you know, we have created a medium in which old media is carried. So BBC Sounds is largely old media from the radio. iPlayer is largely, you know, all our old media forms. It's not entirely true. Whereas games is something which couldn't have existed in an analog form. I mean, we had games, but we didn't have anything like, you know, the kind of usual Fortnite and, you know, other, you know, kind of game formats and so on. Mm. So we, in that way, we have created a new media. And that, I think, is what we should expect to be doing in many different ways, in the same way that with film in the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s, we found what the fabric, what the aesthetic, what the possibilities were of that medium, and we created something which broke free of its sort of shackles of theatre and traditional performance. And I think when we can say we've done that, if we can do that, then we'll really have moved on to the next stage of, you know, taking the potential of digital media and exploiting it.
Mm. And then, you know, in line with everything else we've been saying today, the offshoot of that could be that then when you found a way to really nail the idea of a kind of interactive space and interactive environment, you can start using that meaningfully in ways outside entertainment, you know.
Yes.
Take the gun away from the first person shooter and start to make other ways of interacting with a virtual world, dare I use a 90s word, but right. You know, and then the repercussions for that, for video conferencing, yes. for yeah. business comms, for anything could start to come into play.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very nice idea.
We're running short on time now, but I will just ask, so we can kind of underline the next 50 years of the Internet Project, how can people sort of get involved today and actually help you out with that?
Okay, go to spy.co.uk, which is my website, and the project is pinned on the homepage. There's essentially a kind of manifesto for the kind of principles underlining the project. And as we develop different aspects of it, as I've emphasized, I hope that there'll be lots of public elements of the project before there's anything more substantial, and they kind of prefigure it. But I'm also very interested in people's ideas about, you know, what we could, you know, what forms this interrogation could take place. So one thing I've been doing a lot of work on is the idea of how we visually tell the story of the internet in a way that can help people both understand the different dynamics and forces and people and institutions and technologies and key moments, if you like, as they came together, and from that understand the dynamics which shaped it, but also to allow people to tell their own story and their own history and, if you like, present their own thesis about why the internet came to be, why it took the form it took. And in that way, you can allow people to become storytellers and theorists. So that's a key. And I haven't come across anything which is really trying to do that. And I think that's an idea that could be applied much more widely. Mm. But you know, what I want to do is engage people who understand socio-technical change, history, information visualization, storytelling, data science. There's lots of different disciplines that need to come together. And in a way, I want to call on researchers and academics and so on to solve some of these problems. Because if this project got to the scale that I hope it will get to, then we'll have an amount of data that we can't parse, we can't frame, we can't analyze in the traditional ways that we do these things. Not from a kind of, as I say, from a, you know, the point of view of understanding socio-technical change. And that I will put to anyone who wants to take up that challenge as something I need solving, because I won't know how to solve it. And there'll be lots of other things I don't know how to solve. So that's the kind of spirit. So it's kind of, it's open-ended. It's kind of, you know, I have a goal. I have something I want to understand. I would think society needs to understand. But, you know, everything else is in a way up for grabs.
It's a huge idea and it's ambitious and I absolutely love it. And that is the call to action to everybody out there to start to get involved and start to get that ball rolling and yeah, really, really build something there. Thank you very, very much, Nico McDonald.
Thank you. It's been a
pleasure. Best of luck with the next 50 years of the Internet Project. This has been the 101 podcast. I'm Peter Gothard. Thank you very much for listening and see you all again soon. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.